At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Raffaella, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Stoma for Life. Whether you're tuning in for the first time or you're a regular listener, it's great to have you here. This is just one of the many shows on UK Health Radio, your trusted home for health and well-being. With a growing family of programs covering everything from mental health and fitness to nutrition, chronic illness, emotional wellness, and preventative care, UK Health Radio is dedicated to supporting you in living a healthier and more balanced life, one episode at a time. And the success of the show and the wider station is really down to the incredible generosity of our guests, individuals who have opened up, shared their expertise, and offered truly valuable insight. I've had the privilege of speaking with some fantastic guests in the last 18 months, like, for instance, Geraldine Taylor. She was my very first guest and is a double ostomate since the age of 3. Bowel cancer survivor Mohammed Samat, or Leanne Hayden, who is an ostomate herself and hosts the Beautiful Bag podcast. Not forgetting Paula Heckel, the rock star of ostomates who battled Crohn's disease and now wearing his ostomy bag like a badge of honor, educates millions of people through social media about life in an ostomy. Caroline Bramwell, who went from a major ostomy surgery to becoming an Ironman triathlete. Or Faisal Jacobs, the founder of the South African Society for Ostomates, offering life-changing support across the country and the rest of Africa. Nathaniel Dye, who has stage 4 bowel cancer, with his very emotional account of living with a terminal diagnosis. Incidentally, he's just received his MBE. Now, MBE, for those listening outside the UK, stands for Member of the Order of the British Empire. It's an honor awarded by King Charles to individuals for outstanding service to the community and for making a significant impact in their field. And Nathaniel Dye has raised an incredible amount of money for Macmillan Cancer Research. And then just last week, I spoke to Natasha Rolls, the lead stoma care nurse specialist, who told me, "My job is the greatest privilege anyone can have." Do check out previous episodes that are now available in the newly renamed podcast section of the UK Health Radio website. This was formerly the Listen on Demand. Now, this show is also available on all major podcast platforms under the UK Health Radio umbrella. So wherever you like to listen, we're here. And if you enjoy what you hear, we'd love it if you could leave a rating. It helps more people discover the content. And believe you me, the team at UK Health Radio would really appreciate it. Now, on today's guest. Today's guest is no stranger to the spotlight, whether he's commanding a conference room or navigating the chaos of a punk gig. We're joined by Stefan Thomas, a professional speaker and the best-selling author of Business Networking for Dummies, Instant Networking, and Win the Room. With a career that's seen him speak for organizations like BT, Google, Oxford Brookes University and the Chartered Institute of Management Accountants, Stefan knows exactly how to make an impact with words. But beyond the keynote speeches and packed auditoriums, Stefan also lives with ulcerative colitis, a chronic inflammatory bowel condition that affects every part of daily life. From debilitating fatigue and urgent bowel movements to abdominal pain and unpredictable flare-ups, ulcerative colitis is an invisible illness that's anything but quiet. In this episode, Stefan opens up about the realities of managing a demanding career while living with a chronic condition. He shares the lessons, the humor, and the resilience it takes to stay on top of both a professional speaking career and a very personal health journey. A veteran of over 750 punk gigs, Stefan brings the same energy and honesty to this conversation, one that will resonate with anybody juggling ambition with adversity. So don't go away. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Stefan Thomas, professional speaker, best-selling author, and someone who knows a thing or two about standing out in a room. He's built a career helping people network with confidence, and today he's also sharing a very personal side of his journey, living with and managing ulcerative colitis. Welcome to the show, Stefan.
I'm absolutely flattered to be invited to come and speak to you and your listeners. I really am. So thank you for inviting me along.
Now, I mentioned in the intro that you're a professional speaker on an international level, and obviously having a chronic condition like ulcerative colitis is extremely difficult in any scenario, but especially if you're a professional speaker. Perhaps take us back to the time when you were diagnosed.
Yeah, of course. I was diagnosed in 1997. So my age is pretty simple to work out. I was 27 at the time, and I'd never heard of this thing called ulcerative colitis, but probably like a lot of people, and I'm hoping your audience aren't too squeamish about things, but I was on holiday with my son. I now have three sons, and the son who I'm seeing tonight is 28, but I was on holiday with my baby son at the time in Devon. And I really vividly remember going to the toilet, suddenly needed the toilet, suddenly had an upset tummy in Devon, and there'd been a lot of blood in the toilet. And that was terrifying because I didn't know what caused you to have blood when you go to the toilet. So I came home and made an appointment with my doctor. I actually saw a locum doctor. I remember all of this so vividly, who told me I had hemorrhoids, piles. And I remember thinking at the time, I've made jokes about piles. I read magazine articles that make fun of piles. And I was thinking, if this is what it's really like, then I need to take all of those jokes back. But I kept going back to the doctor and saw my actual GP, and was pretty shortly after that diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. In fact, my GP at the time did a sigmoidoscopy in his surgery, and he said, I'm pretty sure this is something called ulcerative colitis, but we'll refer you on to the hospital to find out. So that was 1997 when I was 27. I'm now 55. It didn't trouble me much at the beginning. I would have episodes of blood and urgency and so on, but it didn't trouble me much. In fact, I think I've been hospitalised three times in my life with colitis, but a lot of the time it's been in remission. However, and my doctor now says to me at your age, Mr. Thomas, it seems to have progressed with age. It seems to have progressed with age and so on. So it's more challenging now, but I've had some big flare-ups that I've had to manage throughout my career as well.
Yeah. Now, I have had a lot of guests who were diagnosed with ulcerative colitis at a very young age, but it took them also a fairly long time, first of all, to be diagnosed. So I'm actually quite happy to hear that they found or they diagnosed you quite soon after you've had visible problems. But for those listening now, what would a flare-up be like? Just talk to those people that might not know what a flare-up is. On this show, there is no taboos and poos or any of that, because, I mean, that's what the show is all about. So please, yes.
As you know, one of the things that I'm trying to do is disarm the taboos, take the taboos apart, because we talk about sex, we talk about the menopause, we talk about so many things, we talk about mental health, and we don't talk about poo. That may be a British thing, but we seem very squeamish about it. And it's a great question, because I thought I had diarrhea. We were on holiday, we were in the UK, but I had an upset tummy. I had to keep going to the toilet whilst we were out with my son. Something interesting to me, you've just said people get diagnosed at a very early age. I got pain in my tummy and remember having bad diarrhea problems when I was a teenager. But I was too embarrassed to go to the doctor or tell anyone about it. It was really because when I got back from holiday, it was stopping me working. The flare-up was, for me, having to go for a poo over 20 times in 24 hours, including through the night, which is still normal for me. I get woken up in the night for the toilet. And then seeing a lot of liquid and a lot of blood, for me, come out with it. The reason that I was fast-tracked to be diagnosed, I think, was the volume of blood that I was producing, because that was alarming to me and just raised the specter that it might be something more serious than ulcerative colitis. My GP was pretty sure it was, but wanted biopsies taken urgently. Again, I remember it, even though it was nearly 30 years ago. But a flare-up for me was going to the toilet a lot, 20 times a day in anyone's standard is a lot. Not because I'd eaten a curry, nothing would make it better or worse that I ate. And not just because I've been woken up at night, but just the fatigue, having to have a sleep after I finished work. I had a full-time job and I was young, so I was perfectly able to push through the day, but nevertheless, just being absolutely exhausted all the time. And I feel bad about that. I feel guilty about that, because a lot of my son's memories of me are sleepy daddy who needed a sleep in the chair at the weekend and so on, because I would be absolutely exhausted after a flare-up. But a flare-up for me, to answer the question, going to the toilet a lot and seeing blood. And if you have listeners who aren't familiar with it, and if that's happening to them, do swallow the embarrassment and go and talk to your doctor. I've never met a doctor who's embarrassed to talk about it. I really haven't. And I've learnt not to be embarrassed about it pretty shortly after getting diagnosed as well. It's really important.
Yeah, it is so important, because like you said, well, you didn't know if it was anything more serious, because obviously we all know that blood in your stool could also be something completely different, you know, another C word. And a lot of people, as you say, they're too embarrassed. But, you know, mind you, the doctors do this on a regular basis, and it's their job to find out what's wrong with you. And I know, obviously, we're inclined to feel shame, but we shouldn't, because we actually have to get peace of mind for us, for going forward. And I always find, you know, once I received my own diagnosis of bowel cancer, I actually thought, okay, well, now this thing has got a name and we can tackle it. You know, then you can sort of move ahead and move on. The guessing game is over.
I think it's worth saying at this point, because you've talked about the shame, and that's a thing. There's also a degree of guilt that goes with all of these things, because you and I walking along the street or working with people probably wouldn't know that we had one of these diseases. And it's interesting to me that I was diagnosed with depression in the same year. I was also diagnosed with depression, or I think on my medical notes it says low mood, in 1997. And I'm pretty sure for a lot of people with these conditions that the things go hand in hand, because there's a degree of very obvious anxiety. When I'm having a flare-up, I can't control when I poo. So you get anxiety with that, but you get a degree of lingering anxiety. And I think no matter how positive I try and be, I think there is a bit of a why me in my psyche as well.
I'm glad you touched on the mental aspect of this, because obviously for you then, I suppose there was well, I mean, you had a diagnosis, and like you said, it sort of coincided, went hand in hand, being diagnosed with this and also, your mental health. What would you say to, I mean, this is, you said 27 years ago. I mean, how have things changed and progressed over the last couple of years, also in terms of mental health? Did you get offered any assistance in that area, or did you have to look yourself, or did you actually go and have a look for help?
Yeah, I mean that's quite a big story in its own right, frankly. How things have progressed in 27 years. I believe that a massive bonus to all of us now is social media, radio shows like yours, greater conversation about it. The Crohn's and Colitis Facebook group is amazing. They're such an amazingly supportive bunch of people. If people come on and say, I've got these symptoms, I don't know what it is, or I'm just feeling down today, we're a really supportive bunch. Didn't have that when I started out. Radio shows like this, where we're actually talking about these issues so that people know that they're there. People like the magician Dynamo coming out and talking about his Crohn's disease, and Amy, whose surname escapes me, the dancer, and people being honest about their Crohn's, their colitis, their stomas. I think that's been a huge change. The generation before me, and I'm going to say the generation of men before me, because girls were taken off at school to be taught about toilet things, about things that happen inside your pants. Boys weren't. So we're very repressed in terms of talking about this stuff. The generation before me never went to their doctor to talk about toilet things, and people ended up suffering all their lives because they were too embarrassed to go and talk to the doctor. So a great progression, I believe, has been the more openness, and I think that social media has been a useful catalyst in allowing people to be open. Certainly, I was hospitalized last September. I became quite ill last year. Being able to talk to my audience about my situation has been really cathartic for me. I've had so many messages from people saying, I thought it was just me. I didn't realize, because I don't get embarrassed, I talk about things on social media. People were very refreshed to hear me talking about it. So that's been a big progression. I think in terms of mental health, yes, I've had to go and look for help at every stage. I don't think you and I have talked about this, but my mental health deteriorated to the extent that I was hospitalized for my mental health in 2018. And I attended a mental health meeting yesterday, so I still keep on top of that. I've probably had to push for assistance and treatment with that more than I've had to push for treatment with my physical condition. And that's only because of the lack of resource in the UK. Mental health provision needs much more investment. Digestive health and gastrointestinal health needs much more investment as well. But all of these things, I think the more that we talk about them, the more that I say, I'm running a business, I stand up on stage in front of people, I can't control when I go to the toilet, and my mental health is a bit iffy at times. I think the more that we're open about that stuff, the more that it promotes the openness and promotes the investment as well. Sorry, that was a really long answer to a short question.
It was an absolute wonderful answer because, well, you've just said it. You had to go and look out for it. And I mean, mental health, I think there should be more emphasis on mental health because it is so important. We go for so many checkups for so many things, but the key thing is our brain, our mental health, and that sort of gets cast to the wayside. I mean, I'm still very thankful for Prince William and Harry, who spoke out about their mental health. And I think when they opened that conversation all those years ago, it actually paved the way to speak openly about mental health, which has become, I think, more normal to talk about it nowadays. But still, a lot has to be done. And I think especially institutions like the NHS, where you then have to advocate for yourself and you have to push for it, I think they should invest more in that because I think long term, it aids all of us. It benefits all of us if our mental health is addressed. And all, no matter if it's a chronic illness or any type of illness, I think mental health should be addressed all the time.
I couldn't agree more. And I think, and this isn't about fault or blame, the consultants and the wonderful IBD nurses in the UK just wouldn't have the time. But no one asks you how you are. They ask you how you are physically, and then you get told that you need to take 2 days off work to go for a colonoscopy because you're going to be sedated, you can't drive the next day, you're going to have to fast for 24 hours beforehand. All of these, and have surgery and so on, and all of the medical appointments, and all of that's exhausting. And I'm not overstating that, particularly when I was first ill and last year, as well as running a business, as well as running a family. I've got five children, all grown up, but nevertheless, I've got five children, and the rest of life doesn't stop. No. Just because we have inflammatory bowel disease or something that causes a bowel problem. And that was the thing that got to me in the end, that I was trying to juggle everything else and this. Yeah. It's like, thanks, universe. And now I've got to go to the toilet for the 18th time today when I'm trying to run a business as well. I think that was one of the things that finally ground me down in 2018. I mean, thankfully, that was the platform for me to build myself back up, because the period of hospitalization made me realize that I needed to work on myself, frankly, to be able to be resilient enough to get through everything that the world throws at us. But I think there is a real opportunity for health professionals to ask that question. How are you? How are you getting on with this? Because I imagine quite a lot of us come away from our meetings with consultants or the realization that we are going to be incontinent or have a stoma, and all of that can be pretty upsetting. And I don't think we talk about that enough, as well as the physical, practical side of things.
Yeah. But, you know, then you're actually touching on a point which you see every day, because how are you is said so effortlessly. Nobody actually wants to hear an answer nowadays. It's just sort of a phrase that's being used. And unfortunately, also perhaps in the medical profession, I'm not sure, but it's a phrase that easily comes, that leaves your lips. Well, how are you? And then you're already thinking about something else. So I think the key is to really sit down with your patient. And I know I've had a wonderful surgeon and consultant, and I was given a questionnaire to fill out when I was diagnosed. And I actually thought, why must I fill this out? I'm not quite sure what they actually want from me. But I was in the fortunate position, if you could call it that. I mean, actually, it was something that wasn't so good. But my husband is a cancer survivor as well. So I had lived through that, through his cancer diagnosis and his cancer journey. So I had a very supportive network, and I sort of knew what was coming, if you could call it that. And I think I ticked everything in the top half, if you could call it that, that I didn't need any aid or help. And I'm sure if I'd elaborated on my mental health, I'm sure I would have been referred to something that would guide me to get help. But I didn't. I didn't need to. And but I needed to do a radio show, and I think that's helped me, speaking to people like yourself, to also come to terms with my life, with my diagnosis, even though it's a completely different one. But I think the key here is to communicate and talk about it.
The what happened to me and what has indirectly ended up with you kindly inviting me to speak to your listeners is that I was really fed up last year. I've learned to manage my and I've learned to be aware of my mental health, but I was speaking for a group of solicitors in Istanbul, a really important gig for me because it's great for my audience to see me speaking overseas. It gets me more work if I'm seen to be speaking internationally. Really good group of solicitors, and I was really ill. And I wasn't telling anyone at the time. I didn't want to worry my wife. I can see in the photos that my tummy was changing shape whilst we were there. It's obvious to me, probably no one else can see it. And I ended up getting really quite ill last year, and that was in July. We were in Istanbul, and then by September, I was admitted to hospital. The pain that I had in my abdomen was too much for me to bear, and I'm used to a lot of pain, but I get pain with my colitis. When I was in hospital, I posted on Facebook, and it wasn't the usual post for me. I'm usually really upbeat, or I'm giving networking advice, or I'm saying this, I'm off speaking in Istanbul. And I made a post which said, look, I'm pretty fed up at the moment. I've got this thing called ulcerative colitis. I'm in hospital. I'm incontinent. And that's really upsetting to me. And the response from me saying, I'm running a business, and do you know what? Everything is not positive. I'm running a business where I'm a personal brand, and it's not all smiles and air travel. Actually, I'm in a really noisy ward in hospital. I'm really fed up, and my body won't let me know when it needs to go to the toilet, which is really unhelpful. The response from people with me just saying, this is life, this happens, has been absolutely overwhelming. Wasn't my intention. I was doing it. It sounds like for the same reason you do the radio show. I had something I wanted to get off my chest, in hospital late at night, and but people have found that very positive for someone running a business to say, do you know what? It's not great every day. Some days, some weeks, some months, some years are actually pretty challenging. And that's become a talking point in the last however long since I said it, 6 months or whatever.
Well, I'm so glad you did, because obviously you found your way here, and you mentioned something very early on in our conversation about men or boys not talking about it. And I must say, I haven't had a lot of men on my show. I don't know if it's still not that they don't like sharing. So I'm double grateful that you are here on the show talking about this, because I think it's so important. And you've experienced it yourself. You spoke about it, and the response was so positive, because I think people are just waiting for something like that. They are too scared. And you, being a professional speaker, you took it upon yourself to actually talk about it, which I'm very pleased you did.
And my comment wasn't intended to be sexist in any way. I often
No,
wonder
no.
if it'll be interpreted that way, but I do think it's because when I was at middle school, the girls were taken off into another classroom and we weren't told what they were being talked to about because, and I just think that girls were given more grounding in talking about things where we were left alone. So when something changes in our sexual health or in our bowel health, it wasn't something that you would bring up. And also, children at school can be pretty awful. Bowel conditions and things like that were generally people would poke fun at. But I think we got used to internalizing it. Davina McCall has done an amazing job in talking about menopausal health and so on. Something else that wasn't talked about a generation or so ago, the royal princes did such a good job in starting the conversation about mental health. No one's talking about toilet health. And I believe I've worked with the folks at Crohn's and Colitis UK. I believe the figures are around 600,000 people in the UK we believe have Crohn's and colitis, the two associated conditions. A lot of those people are sitting at home suffering, and I just hope that one of them is listening to this program. One will be enough that is then prompted to go to their GP and say, I heard this guy and I've got blood in my poo too. Can we have a chat about it? Because we're just rubbish at it. Just generally, men have been awful at talking about health things, and particularly toilet health things and sexual health things. So we need to get better, like literally need to get better, because then we can be helped to get physically better. So that's my little mission at the moment, to use my lack of embarrassment so that hopefully other people can at least swallow a bit of their embarrassment and get along to the doctors.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderfully said. We're going to have a quick commercial break and then we'll be talking about, I think, the Lou of the Year awards.
Oh, brilliant. I'd absolutely love to talk about that.
Okay, we'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I'm joined by Stefan Thomas, a professional speaker and best-selling author, and he kindly shared with us his journey of ulcerative colitis, especially as a professional speaker, all the hurdles he had and has to take on a daily basis. Now, before we closed, I spoke about the Lou of the Year awards. Please tell us more about it. I believe you got onto them through the charity. Is that correct?
It wasn't through the charity, but I'll talk about it. And the charity Crohn's and Colitis UK has become an important part of the Lou of the Year awards as well. I speak at a lot of trade shows and business shows. Broadly speaking, I sell books about networking. I sell myself as a speaker. I sell various training courses. And so a lot of my life is spent at regional business shows and expos and anywhere where there's going to be an audience of small businesses. So last May 2024, I was speaking at the Herefordshire Means Business Expo. Rich Beale and his family, who run Herefordshire Means Business, are frankly amazing people who do a lot for the Herefordshire business community. I've known Rich for about 10 years, and he asked me if I would speak at this expo. So I gladly agreed. Went along and spoke at his expo, had maybe 25 or 30 people in the audience. And at the end of at the end of my presentation, Becky and Jane, who run between them the Lou of the Year Awards, along with Becky's husband Charles, they approached me, Becky and Jane, and said, look, we do this thing. Would you be interested in being a speaker? How much does it cost? We like your energy and how you speak. And the deal was done pretty much there and then. There's a photo of me and Becky and Jane sat on a picnic bench outside the Herefordshire Expo, and we pretty much agreed it there and then. They went away to work out how much they were going to pay and so on. But I met Becky Wall, British Empire Medal, who runs the Lou of the Year Awards, and I'd never heard of it. And the Lou of the Year Awards is open to anywhere that has what they describe as an away-from-home toilet. So whether that's a venue, a pub, a shopping centre, a tourist attraction, a place of work, a building site, a hotel, anywhere that has toilets that people use when they're not at home can enter the Lou of the Year Awards. And they send an inspector, unannounced, with a 100-point checklist to check on the toilets. And so Becky approached me and said, would you like to speak? And I said, do you know what? Actually, this is a really important subject to me because I have ulcerative colitis. So I have a mental map of where the good motorway services toilets are, where the good toilets are anywhere we go shopping. And Becky said, do you know what? Better than that, the Loo of the Year Awards has a map in an app that shows where their winners are so that we can know where the really good clean toilets are, the toilets with changing places and proper disabled facilities and so on. And I'd never heard of it. And we agreed for me to speak. I got to know Becky and Charles, her husband, particularly. They run another business supplying toilets to music festivals. That's their primary business. And I turned up at the beginning of this January for the awards. And I have to say, and all credit to Becky, this is a much bigger event than I was expecting. This is sponsored by Tork, T-O-R-K. So they're the people who put the blue paper hand towels and the things that smell nice in urinals and that sort of thing. They're the people who do all of that. It's entered by people like Wetherspoons and various shopping centres around the UK. It was a huge event. There was an MC. I was the speaker in the middle of the day. We had a TV personality, Sean Williamson, as the lunchtime entertainment. And all of these venues, from the top management to the actual hygiene operative who cleans the toilets, had all turned out for this full day event to receive their awards. The Palace of Windsor, the Windsor Castle, they enter. All of, I think I've got that right. Part of the Royal Estate enters. If I've got that wrong, Becky will correct me. But all of these people were there. And in conversation with me, Becky was already considering having Crohn's and Colitis UK as their chosen charity, because they have a number of events on the day for to raise money for charity as well. There's a raffle and various competitions in at lunchtime. And so the relationship with me cemented that deal. Crohn's and Colitis UK were involved last year and they're involved this year as well. And they sent a representative along who also spoke and spoke about colitis. And I stood up on stage and said, this is important. I literally choose shopping centres based on whether I'm going to be able to go to the toilet and go to the toilet comfortably. I choose hotels and restaurants and so on. This is important commercially. And it went so well. You heard it here first, because this hasn't been announced yet, that they invited me back to MC the whole event next year. So I spoke on stage for half an hour this year. Next year, I'm doing the whole, I think, 8-hour event. Now, that's another subject, because obviously someone with ulcerative colitis has to medically manage themselves to be able to stand on stage for a period of time. But the Loo of the Year Awards, loo.co.uk, apologies for the shameless plug, but they're amazing. They really, really are. It is a business, but it's an absolute passion project for Becky and Charles Wall. They work with the British Toilet Association. They work with Change in Places. They work with Crohn's and Colitis UK. They are absolutely on a mission to make sure that our toilet comfort away from home is at least as good as it is at home.
Yeah. This is such good news, because obviously I, as an ostomate, I'm also always on the lookout for where's my next toilet. And funny enough, on the weekend, on Sunday, my husband and myself, we were in Richmond just going for a nice stroll. And I needed to have a bag change. And I wasn't quite sure how am I going to do this, because obviously a lot of places are closed on a Sunday. And then I walked past Wagamama. And in Richmond, Wagamama is in the first story. And I thought, okay, I'll just walk in there and then I've got my radar key and I'll just, you know, go to the toilet. And, you know, I was so surprised, because the disability toilet was right at the bottom of the stairs. I didn't even have to speak to anybody or ask anybody. All I did was take out my radar key and I found a fully fledged, perfectly organized toilet for my bag change. And, you know, it is such a relief to know that you, first of all, can go to a toilet, and then you're just so happy when everything that you require, which is not a lot, but when everything is in place. So my husband was outside waiting for me, and all I did was just have a big smile when I came out the loo. No comment was necessary. He knew everything went well. Well, if you could call it that. But I
Yeah,
know
I think you can call it that because we've got a shopping centre in Oxford, the Westgate Shopping Centre, which I'm gonna name them because they're amazing, and they have a ladies' toilet, they have a gents' toilet, they have a couple of disabled toilets and a change in places and a baby changing toilet, and they have a this toilet is for everyone toilet, and it's a separate cubicle which has got the toilet and the wash basin and a shelf and other bits and pieces in there. And sometimes I get challenged coming out of disabled toilets. Again, it's a bigger conversation because apparently I don't look disabled, but because of colitis, I need a disabled toilet. The concept of this toilet is for everyone toilet was, I think that's an amazing step forward. So, like you, it makes me really happy when I know that that's available to me because it makes my whole shopping experience more comfortable. So that's just like you, that sort of thing leaves me smiling as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, a big shout out to the Loo of the Year. I'll definitely be tuning in and listening or looking out for the awards, because I think it's something, especially in our community, something that is so necessary and so vitally important. I didn't even know that there was an app where you could actually track the winners or see where is your nearest good Loo.
And it's such a good idea. And from their point of view, it's the sort of thing that we just need to see more of, more investment in toilets. It's not a subject that people like talking about, but it's the one thing that we all use when we're out and about. So they really ought to be of a better standard.
Absolutely. And educate people about it, because I think, sadly enough, I mean, my youngest son is, I've got two sons. My youngest son is 16, and he will not use the toilet in the school. He says, "No, mom, they're disgusting." It's just, I'll even though the school's is a good school and they've got new facilities, but it's just the concept of toilets at the you as a youth. It's just he says, well, he'll do anything except go to the toilet in the school. I think it's just maybe also, the awareness of people going into the loo and leaving it the way they found it, not making a whole big mess.
I would struggle to go to the toilet in school because I've got ulcerative colitis. I'm really noisy. I wouldn't want to be going to the toilet if there were a load of other teenagers just outside a half inch thick wooden door. I
Absolutely.
get it from his point of view. I really do. I think that's something continually. Schools do enter the Loo of the Year awards, by the way. That's something continually for educational establishments to think about, and I completely appreciate that their resources is shrinking, so toilets are on a very long list of things they need to do, but it must affect some children. I was lucky enough for part of my school career to live within 5 minutes walk from my house, but I appreciate, and I came home for lunch, but I appreciate lots of kids are stuck at school all day, so the toilets ought to be a better standard. I just want to make absolutely sure that I've got my information correct. So the Loo of the Year map is either on their website, which is mobile accessible, or is an app. I'll just be clear about that because I'm just questioning whether I've remembered that correctly. So
Unfortunately, we're almost at the end of the show, but I want to give you, first of all, the opportunity to perhaps share your social media where people can follow you on social media. And I want to know what's on the cards for you now. What does this year look like? I believe you've got a lot of speaking engagements, and what are your plans for the year ahead?
So I'll answer it in the opposite way to how you asked it then. So the plans for this year are to get back on track after a year of distractions because, so from July onwards, I was ill, hospitalized, weak, physically, not able to do much. I lost a lot of momentum last year. I was really lucky that when I came into this year, we had me speaking at the Lou of the Year Awards on, I think, the 15th of January, certainly very early on in January. So we, very early in the year, I had my first speaking gig, and that led to other opportunities, them rebooking me for next year for a start. I've put a lot of effort into my social media, my business social media, at the beginning part of this year, and that's resulted in I've just shared that I'm going to be speaking at the TBE show, which I think is the 11th of September. I'm speaking in Bristol. I'm speaking in Birmingham. I'll put all of this on my website and my socials. I've got various paid corporate speaking events this year as well. But anything that's open, I put there out on my socials. So having spent most of last year being ill, I think it was Bruce Forsyth who said he's been busy being ill. That's how I felt last year. Having done that, I'm consolidating and I'm out there speaking a lot this year. And if your listeners do choose to follow me and fancy coming along to one of the public events, they will be very welcome, particularly if they run small businesses. My socials are quite simple because I'm quite easy to find. I am Stefan Thomas. My website is stefanthomas.biz, B-I-Z, and all of my socials are Stefan Thomas Biz. So on Instagram, you'll find me as Stefan Thomas Biz. On Facebook, you'll find me on LinkedIn and so on. But just search in my name. I'm reasonably easy to spot. I'm a 55-year-old man with a mohawk and earrings and so on. I tend to stick out a little bit and would love to be connected with people. If people need pointing at the Crohn's and Colitis Facebook group, then please message me. It's a completely free and amazing resource. And I talk about lots of things on my socials. I don't just post about my business. There's an awful lot of talk about the illness, about being open about it, and quite a lot of motivational stuff because I'm increasingly talking about running a business with a chronic illness because I'm a long way away from being the only one in this predicament. So many people actually run businesses because being employed was a bit of hassle when we need so much time off sick. So very happy to connect with your listeners.
I'm very happy to have met you. Thank you so much for your time. And I wish you well for all the endeavors, everything going forward. And can't wait to perhaps see you on one of the speaking engagements. Take care.
Thank you for inviting me. And thank you everyone for listening as well.
Thank you so much. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.